Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Gaza ceasefire negotiations continue in Qatar for the second day today amid efforts to defuse tensions across the Middle East. Talks went into the evening yesterday with US officials describing the meeting as constructive. Hamas officials who have accused Israel of stalling are not participating in the talks. This comes as the death toll in the Palestinian territory reached a grim milestone of 40,000 people, according to local health authorities there. I'm joined now by Alistair Bunkle, Sky News Middle East correspondent. Good morning, Alistair. Before we get down to the progress of the substantive talks themselves, are Hamas really not participating in these talks, or are the lines of communication with them open via Egyptian government officials?
Hamas are there. They're not in the room. They're never in the room. The Israelis and Hamas don't sit around the same table. The talks yesterday took place in the Qatari Prime Minister's offices. I'm not sure whether taking place today, probably the same place. Hamas, their political leadership, is based in Doha. So their sort of threat or statement not to be present at the talks is a fairly empty threat. I think it's a tactic because they wouldn't be in the room anyway. Okay, they're not in the same building, but they're in the same city. They're close by. And so the mediators from Qatar and Egypt, who are sort of acting more on their behalf, are able to relay messages and brief them about what's going on.
And is there a danger, do you think, perhaps, of a gap between the political leadership in Doha and Yahya Sinwar's leadership on the ground in Gaza widening, and that they might not be moving in lockstep?
Yeah, I think that is a danger. It was certainly the case in previous rounds of talks when Ismail Haniyeh was the political leader of Hamas and was the point man for negotiations. He's now dead, assassinated in Tehran, and there are others like Khaled Meshaal who are now taking part in the talks for Hamas in Doha. We don't know yet how much coordination has gone on between Hamas in Doha and Sinwar in Gaza ahead of these talks, and how much is coordination is going on during it. But bear in mind, it's hard to reach Sinwar in Gaza often because he's hiding deep underground.
So what have the stumbling blocks been, and what progress has been made on them?
Well, I'd say there's probably two or three major stumbling blocks. Firstly is the presence, or the continued presence, of Israeli soldiers in Gaza, one along what's known as the Philadelphia Corridor, which is basically the border stretch between Egypt and Gaza, where they are currently. Israel says they need to stay there because they need to prevent Hamas from smuggling weapons back into Gaza. Hamas want them out. And then there's something called the Netzarim Corridor, which pretty much splits Gaza in two, north and south. And again, the Israelis want to stay there, and they want to be able to check any Palestinian men of fighting age who are moving back from south to north to make sure that they're not taking weapons with them. Again, Hamas opposes that. And then there are other stumbling blocks as to which hostages are released first, their identities, which Palestinian prisoners and their identities are released in exchange. And then you'll go even deeper into sort of the nitty-gritty of, you know, are there certain points during the daytime in a ceasefire where Israeli planes and drones are prevented from flying over Gaza, for example.
How big a problem do you think it is likely to be that some estimates now suggest that there are only about 40 or maybe 50 of the hostages still alive?
I think it is a problem for the Israelis. The IDF general, whose brief is to be in charge of getting the hostages back, briefed Netanyahu before this general left for Qatar and said it is getting very dangerous for the hostages, the remaining hostages who are alive, to stay in Gaza. And he told the Prime Minister, you know, we can keep fighting in Gaza and we will keep making inroads into Hamas, but the longer we keep fighting, the greater risk there is to the hostages who are alive and the possibility that they will die as a result. So, you know, there is real pressure from that front
as well. But if they are a key negotiating chip in these talks, and, you know, there are only a third of the number of hostages that could potentially be delivered at the end as has been expected or promised, is that going to be a deal breaker, do you think?
Yeah, I think which hostages come out and when is something that has divided the two sides. It's caused a bit of divisions in Israel as well. I was with a relative of a hostage in Gaza yesterday, and we were chatting, and she said to me, you know, not all the families are behind this deal. I said, why is that? She said, well, because some of them, particularly, you know, for example, the parents of male IDF soldiers who are being held, they are worried that those guys will not be allowed out for a long, long time and will be retained by Hamas for months as bargaining chips. And they want a deal that sees everybody come out, sort of all for all, from the very word go. So, you know, there are divisions in Israel. There are divisions between Hamas and Israel. But these are ceasefire negotiations. And ultimately, all ceasefire negotiations require compromise. And it's about trying to find the compromise that's acceptable.
Meanwhile, on the ground in Gaza, we passed that awful milestone of 40,000 yesterday. Yeah. The Israelis dispute it. The UN says that it is probably there or thereabouts. But it could actually be significantly higher than that, couldn't it?
Yeah, truth be told, I think it probably is higher than that. The figures are disputed by Israel because they say the figures come from a health ministry in Gaza that's run by Hamas. Now, you know, there is some sort of truth in that. But at the same time, these figures have been considered to be broadly accurate by aid organizations, even by Israeli intelligence. If you look back at previous wars between Hamas and Israel, okay, nothing ever on this scale. But if you look back at previous wars, actually, once things have settled down and the death toll is counted up, the estimate throughout the conflict has proven to be broadly correct. And the fact is, there will be, you know, thousands of bodies almost certainly still undiscovered, buried under rubble. Gaza is you know, vastly destroyed. When I've been in there, it is, you know, barely some places, buildings left standing, and there will be bodies underneath the rubble for sure.
What now is happening on the West Bank? Because it certainly seems to be increasingly unstable.
It is. On the one hand, the West Bank has not flared up in quite the way people might have feared in the days after October 7th. On the other hand, it is very unstable for a multitude of reasons. And in particular, violence by Israeli settlers against Palestinians has been on the increase. And we saw an example of that last night, a pretty extreme example of that last night, when more than 100 settlers went into a village called Jit, which is in the northern West Bank, and went rampage, set fire to buildings, cars, some buildings, you know, I'm told, with families still inside them. One Palestinian man shot dead. Huge condemnation around the world from the White House, from capitals in Europe. The US ambassador I saw this morning in Israel tweeted his condemnation of it. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was critical of it. But, you know, it is not a good situation. The attention has not been on the West Bank because it has been on Gaza, because things have been so intense in Gaza. But quietly, but surely, things have been getting very bad at the West Bank.
And it does, doesn't it, inform so much of Israeli politics now? I mean, in your analysis, is the settler movement on the West Bank the tail that wags the Israeli political dog, or is there going to be a reckoning there between Israeli civic society and these hardline settlers at some point soon?
I think the hardline settlers, the real extreme nationalists, feel emboldened. I think they believe they can act with impunity. And I have to be honest, if you look at the number of arrests and convictions that come of any of these incidents, it is very, very small indeed. They have allies in the government at the moment. The coalition has, as is, we know, well known now, some pretty extremist right-wing elements to it. The National Security Minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, is one of them. And so the extremist movement, the extremist settlers in the West Bank feel very emboldened, and that is why we see them acting as they do. You know, the Americans have got quite tough on them. They want to get tougher, I believe, privately. But, you know, they've called it out. They've started labelling a lot of these acts as terrorism, which doesn't go down well in Israel. But labelling it as terrorism, they've started to sanction some of them as well. It's not going to have a huge effect, sanctioning individual settlers, because most of them, you know, probably have no intention of leaving Israel anyway. But if the Americans decide to sanction, for example, companies who help build settlements, then that could become a real problem.
Is Israel now immune to diplomatic entreaties and lobbying? Because, I mean, I see that David Lammy, the UK Foreign Secretary, is heading there today. But what you're describing is a body politic, rather, that is kind of immune to these pleas from outside.
I think Benjamin Netanyahu is focused on his own political survival, and his priority is himself. That then moves on to his coalition and the dynamics within that. And you've got a lot of the far right threatening to leave the coalition, collapse the government if a ceasefire is done. Then you've got US pressure on them, which Netanyahu's ignored a lot of times during the 10 months of conflict, repeatedly ignored it. And then you have everybody else, like David Lammy, the French foreign minister, is here today. All greatest respect in the world to the British Foreign Secretary and others, and they are here to keep the pressure up on Israel to do a ceasefire deal. They're not going to sway Netanyahu if he does not want to be swayed in that direction. Mm. The words and statements are all very well, but they're not going to convince the Israeli Prime Minister to act in a way he doesn't want to act.
Alistair Bunkle, Sky News Middle East correspondent, thank you very much as always. Coming up, following Ireland's Olympic success, athletics tracks in Cork and Dublin are called for more government funding.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.